a mic that would let me wander around, and got rid of the stage. My name is Marcia McLean, Reverend Marcia to some, but not all, and thank you for choosing to be here tonight. This is an inaugural event for me, a person with over 30 years clean and sober, and over 30 years in the science of mind and spirit, also called religious science or science of mind. It doesn't matter. I was raised a Unitarian Universalist and became a metaphysician in sobriety. And so I have found that there is a beautiful correlation between everything that we learn in recovery, everything that we learn in even being pop armchair psychologists, and everything that I've learned in my spiritual program, that they all, of course, weave beautifully together. And the reason that this is an inaugural event in my life is because I've been, like so many people, I've been a person who goes to meetings and shows up as a member of that fellowship, and then I go to where I actually teach and speak and show up as a member of that. And I realized about 3 years ago that I was bringing half of me to each of those two places. And it didn't feel very good. And so it just turns out that way of life and being invited into this conference presented a perfectly timed opportunity, along with my own evolution, to be able to show up as Reverend Marcia Lynn McLean, a licensed practitioner and a person with 30 years sober, and to be able to say in the same room, 30 years clean, and 12 years smoke-free this time, because I did that more than once. I don't have white chips for cigarettes. Anyway. So for me, this was an opportunity to share what it's been like to have almost like these two DNA strands, and one of them is 12-step recovery, and the other one is this ever-evolving spirituality. I know it has some funny names in there. I mentioned science twice. It has nothing to do with Scientology. I don't even know what that is. But what I do know is that it is a brand of applied metaphysics. So I learned from my recovery program, of course, that I needed to find a God of my understanding that I could call by whatever name that I wished, but I needed to have a relationship with that higher power. So back in Fort Lauderdale at the end of 1985, I went looking for that God. And I was raised a Unitarian Universalist in New England, okay? So maybe that's part of where that funny voice comes from. And my parents were renegades. They were all about freedom and liberty and whatever, do things your own way. So I had no spiritual background, but my mother had started to dabble when she became sick with cancer while I was getting sober. And so she started to hand me a few things that got me involved on a spiritual path, as well as the fact that she was studying psychology to become a social worker. So I got these little tidbits from her that were a start for spirituality and for psychology. And then, thank goodness, I found my way into the rooms at 23. I'm going to be turning 55 soon. Yes. So what I wanted to share is that I found something along the way. I found that both that my study of metaphysics has revealed to me that there is an element of personal responsibility in life. Who to thunk it, right? And that in recovery, I also discovered an element of personal responsibility in life. Now, when I was 23 and 24, I wasn't sure that that was appealing, but I had a sponsor who said, oh, you bet it is, right? So here we are in Fort Lauderdale studying the science of mind and also going to 12-step meetings, and I belong to every fellowship. AA is my primary fellowship. I was a longtime member of Narcotics Anonymous. I went to CODA. I went to ACOA before there was an ACA. In fact, we drove all the way up to Boynton Beach for that one. And then I figured I would drop into Al-Anon whenever I broke up with someone or got dumped. Right? Okay. And I had no room in my life for OA, but I could have used it. So you get the picture, right? So what I've discovered is that definitely for me, this has been a journey. And I suspect that it has been a journey for all of you too. Am I right? Okay. Now, do any of you have a sense of purpose about this journey? Yeah. Do you get the sense that, well, it's not just that I'm a messed up person and I needed to get help because the way that I was acting out had become unmanageable? Do you get the realization that once you addressed that and got it so that it was somewhat under control, that a greater purpose started to reveal itself? That's what happened for me. It sounds so trite, but I really get that everything that I have been through has prepared me to be there for someone else who's going through that thing now. And so, you know what's funny too? This isn't my notes, but I really learned how to be a speaker by meetings. You know, I had classes in college, and I don't really know how well I did with those, but I do remember that, you know, one of the things about being in recovery is that when you ask, you know, will you lead a meeting, will you share, or whatever, even though every fiber in my body said, no way, I did, again, because my sponsor said, when you're asked, you say yes. My home group in Fort Lauderdale, the newcomers had 15 years. Most of them were, you know, 40 and beyond. And they told us what to do, and that was good stuff. So the reason that I'm here tonight is actually to talk about this idea that we are evolving in our recovery, and to talk about this idea that we also have some kind of a purpose that is greater than just us getting better. And for me, discovering, number one, that I'm dealing with infinity, right? So I'm always going to be evolving. But also recognizing that there's a greater purpose than just me, myself, and I in this. It changes the tone of my recovery. It makes me more willing on those days when things are really, really tough. So I accept it now that it is a gift for me to have become an alcoholic, to become an addict, to have become addicted to cigarettes, to have become addicted to a couple other things I try to do in moderation because I'm not willing to give them up. Okay. What I have found also in this evolution is not just that it's a journey, and not just that there was sort of a noble purpose in this pathway of addiction and recovery, but something else too. And that has to do with that very strange handout, which I will tell you more about in a few minutes. What I realized is that when I look back now on everything that the program told me to do, everything that my sponsors told me to do, I realized there was so much more to it. I don't know about you, but the first time that I was told, you have to get up every morning, yes, with extra time before you go to work, which you should also do, and read the 12 and 12, and read the big book, and read something else that is inspirational to you of your choosing every day. And at least try to learn how to meditate. And try to learn how to pray or commune with your higher power in some way. My second sponsor, all the people that I attract to be teachers in my life, they are hardcore, let me tell you. The second one made me sign a contract. Ooh. Anyway. So here I was, you know, it's like, I don't know about you, but I remember when I was 17, my mother still made me sit at the table and finish my vegetables before I could go out. I'm like, Ma, you know, I'm too old for that. She made me stay there. And my sponsors were like that. And so what happened was, because I was afraid of getting in trouble for not doing what they told me I must do, I did it, and something happened for me. Things like developing the habit of getting up in the morning, developing the discipline. Do you know disciples have discipline? Developing the discipline of reading that stuff as instructed. And then my journey from, we're talking about the very end of 1985 to present, of learning how to meditate. I remember in Fort Lauderdale, I'm like, okay, I'm going to turn out all the lights, and I'm going to light a candle, and I'm going to stare at it. And then I made my affirmations, you know, my postures, and I tried everything. And I have to confess that I kind of dig the Oprah Chopra thing a little bit sometimes. I tried that for a while. Now I just know how to do it. But I remember I gave lip service to those things and didn't get any results. Here's what else happened. So I did these things, and I got some discipline, and I began to experience something that was happening in me. It was happening for me. And what do you know? It's the objective of the whole thing. So I began to have those spiritual experiences. I went God shopping by the time my sponsor had me on my third step. And I went to Unity, and it didn't quite fit for me. And then I went to this Church of Religious Science in Fort Lauderdale, and it fit for me. I could call my God by whatever name I choose and have an intelligent working relationship. And so I did that. So what happened was lots of dabbling in Fort Lauderdale in the mid-80s, right? Anybody do that? Uh-huh. Okay. And my spiritual life grew. And I was not consistent about this. As soon as I got sober, I got jobs on yachts and took off and didn't take my program with me. And then I was like really a basket case. I never picked up, but I was definitely a basket case. And so what happened was this original sponsor and this other one, I had two of them who were both really hardcore, they wanted me to call and check in. And I couldn't lie to them, so I still had to find meetings no matter what, including those in the rooms, the guys who were around the corner at 4 o'clock. One of my sponsors said, you have to use that if you're going to travel. So what happened was, even though I didn't want to have the discipline to have that spiritual pattern in my life, the unmanageability that I discovered when I took away the drink and the drug and even the cigarettes at times was, okay, now the rest, what's left, is how you know how to live. And this needs to get better. I would race off to work without having eaten and then have this dramatic scene of being hungry, you know. And it went on and on. But I couldn't lie to these people. So I started to learn how to take this with me. And then I had the most amazing experiences. I worked 12-hour days for, you know, a month and a half straight. But I would do things like, I do my prayer and my meditation and my reading. And then I do this massive amount of work. And then I'd run up the mountain and look down and say, ooh, I need to get back there in time to shower, put on my evening uniform, set the table, serve dinner. It was crazy. But it was fun, because what happened is that I began to experience the spiritual connection in a way that did amazing things for me. I could have it all. I could have an amazing job, but also feel invigorated. I could have adventures, but also be grounded. I could have amazing revelations and inspiration. Things like, I had a lot of work to do, and time just seemed to bend for me. It was fantastic. And so it was through doing what I was told that I discovered a way of being that was really wonderful. So many times, like anyone else, I have let that practice go, and then life has gone back to being crazy. And then I pick it back up, and there's that stillness again. So what I've discovered is that not only is this a journey, and not only is it purposeful, but this thing that happens when we get into that space that we have been so gently encouraged to find, is that we tap into a sense of who we truly are. And as one of my colleagues says, who we have come here to be. And it's magnificent. And now when I teach classes, I realize that the same thing that I was doing after school when I was a very unruly 17-year-old, and what I was trying to get, this feeling I was chasing after so desperately with drugs and alcohol, is this amazing feeling that I get in meditation, that I get in prayer, that I get in contemplation. And so I feel like the joke's on me, or maybe it's on all of us, that this thing that we've been looking for, chasing after, that feeling of oneness, of course it's been there all along. And we've heard this before, that we reached for substitutes because we didn't know any better. We just didn't know any better. And so I would find the perfect alchemist mixture of this, that, and the other to get just this wonderful feeling for such a short time. And then it would wear off, and everything would be so much worse afterwards. Whereas, when I finally listened and practiced long enough, my spiritual practice led me to something that is fulfilling. And when I come out of that state, things are not worse afterwards, they're better. And it is something that's consistently there for me whenever I reach for it. It's not elusive. And so I feel like the punchline after all of this time of being willing to do what my sponsor suggested and then saying, I'm too busy, you know, and then coming back to it is, wow, this is way better than the best stuff I ever bought and smoked and, you know, drank or whatever, or the best combination of any of those things. So I get it. So I always introduce myself as a grateful recovering person because I am grateful. And I realize today that all of the crazy things that I did in my life, and I bet this is true for you too, they make sense to me now. The things in my patchwork background all lend themselves to who I am now, what I'm doing, and where I'm headed with it. And I really would imagine that the same is true for you. There are a couple of teachers that I really found very interesting. One of them is Ken Wilber. Anybody try to read? Okay, yeah, okay, hand in the back. Somewhat challenging to understand and worth it, worth it, worth it. So one of the things that Ken Wilber says is that if you practice states of consciousness, you will suddenly arrive at stages of consciousness. The practice, inducing the states through prayer and meditation and contemplation and those things, those are temporary, those states. However, you do it long enough until you end up somewhere else. You end up at a higher stage, which is permanent. So actually, if you do what your sponsor tells you consistently, you will evolve and you will become more and you will not have to go back to where and who you used to be. I find that fascinating. I also read from Dr. Joe Dispenza. He has this stuff, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. He says that if you start out with a philosophy and then you initiate it, what happens eventually is that you master it. So you go from being a philosopher to an initiate, think about that as being a newcomer, to being a master. And now, and I'm not speaking in the face of what we believe in our fellowships about the necessary re-engagement and claiming our seats. I'm not saying this is not about graduating. But this is about being willing to imagine that we're constantly evolving on this amazing path of addiction and recovery. Because I believe if we give ourselves permission to know that we are evolving, we have access to all of the gifts of this path. Not just, I'm no longer in jail, I'm no longer a troublemaker, some people actually trust me, you know, whatever, but so much more than that. There's another scale that Zig Ziglar puts out in his motivational work. He says that we can be over here in the survival mode, just trying to survive, or we can be one notch up, which is striving. We can keep at it until we have a level of success, and we can even get to the point where what we're doing is looking at how we're going to have significance. Another way to say that is impact or leaving a legacy. I think it's wonderful to imagine that we didn't do all of this just so we could stay out of trouble, but that so we could do something great. I really believe that there is purpose in this journey. If we look around, if we look at the news today, how many people need a cosmology? How many people need a higher power and a relationship with it, whatever they choose to call it? How many people need to remember that they have purpose, that their lives have purpose, that possibility is available to them too? So we can be there for them in addition to the ways that we are there for one another in meetings by just opening up a little bit and recognizing that hunger, that thirst, that familiar something that is in some way related to our path of addiction and recovery. So this chart that you have, a couple other authors that come to mind. On the left side of it, let me just look at it myself. On the left side of it are some states of feeling and emotion. You start at the bottom at the survival level. You see where that is? And the emotional states are fearful, isolated, despairing, and hopeless. That would be before we got in recovery, right? And by the way, this is from Reverend Dr. Bernardo Montserrat, who is a minister in the same teaching that I am, and a psychologist as well. This would be very similar to David Hawkins' Power Versus Force, a consciousness calibration list. It might be similar to something you would see in the Abraham Ask and It Is Given. And you may not have seen this at all. However, I think we can all relate to these in some way. The idea is that when we get into recovery or when we get into a personal development, spiritual growth on purpose and psychological evolution, we move from survival to a more expansive state. We are then dreaming, we are wanting, we are rehearsing, intending, and committing. And our emotional state is one of pride, encouragement, creativity, imagination, and resourcefulness. It moves up to this next level, which we call truthful, which is living in truth, and there's a funny word in there, treat, where we might be visualizing and affirming in our daily practice. We might be prayerful, and treatment, by the way, is a metaphysical term for prayer. We might be meditating, right? It's not a might. This is what happens at the level when we are doing those things regularly. And then our feeling states are of compassion, they're faith-filled, connected, and inspirited. And finally, we have this opportunity occasionally, and maybe even more often, to experience those mystical qualities, having visions, intuitive flashes, knowing, and just being in a state of being. Our emotional state then is awed, grateful, blissful, and one of love. And at last we realize oneness. We recognize that we're all connected. And when I read that and just get in a feeling state going up and up in that chart and get to that top part, I realize that's what I was after with all of that chemistry. You know? All of that stuff I put in my body trying to achieve a certain feeling. So what I believe, as I said earlier, is that number one, this is a journey. I believe that it has purpose. I believe that it brings us to what we were looking for all along. And I also believe that what we can do when we reach this point, some of you know me as a person who sort of camps out at this crossroads, not to think that we ever need to give up our meetings, but to bring something more to them. Because how many people, especially in early recovery or struggling to put just a little time together, have any idea what awaits them? All they can think is, I'm a sick person trying to get, a bad person trying to be good, or I'm trying to stay out of trouble, or get someone off my back, or this is really hard. And the idea that this is a journey of evolution, that it is purposeful, and that we get what we've been after all along, I think is worth sharing. So the last thing I want to say is that tomorrow in this room, myself and a gentleman who is also a minister in this teaching, and he has 56 years of sobriety, we're going to be doing a scientific prayer workshop tomorrow. That's at 11. And that's an opportunity to practice something which is a formula for praying, believing. It's really fascinating. It doesn't matter if you are a Christian, a Jew, a Buddhist, an atheist, a naturalist, a scientist. That's not of any import. What matters is that you can learn a formula to pray, believing, that allows you to engage in the creative process on purpose, eyes wide open. And the beautiful thing about all of this is to begin to recognize that, wow, there really is a relationship between the inner and the outer. What happens when we step into recovery and when we do what we've been asked to is that we learn to let go of an outer locus of control and to move to an inner locus of control. And then it's like getting on an elevator. If we first stop blaming people, places, and things, and go within during our daily practice, and we stick with it, we'll begin to elevate, and we'll begin to move up on this scale. That's all we have to do, is listen to those hard-nosed sponsors and do those things until we have that experience and we realize it's been there all along. So thank you for allowing me this opportunity to share something that I've felt in my heart and never said to a group of assembled fellow recovering people ever before. Thank you so much. Namaste. So we have a few more minutes, two things. We want to get out of here a little early so we can get over to your session, Gus, at 7, right? Okay. But I'd love to know, if does anybody have any thoughts or questions? We can pass the microphone around. Yes. Oh, I think that would be a Gus question. Okay. Well, for me, meditation is silent, and contemplation involves my mentality. For me, contemplation would be that I'm going to sit quietly and read something that inspires me. Now, I could take it into meditation. I could take one idea into meditation, and that would also be contemplation that moves into meditation with a single idea. But when I'm still sort of in the thinking about it, reading something, saying, wow, that's interesting, that doesn't really answer your question, but I would say I read and I contemplate, and then I go into meditation, and sort of one leaves off and the other one takes place. Anybody else? Yes.
My name's Beanie. Thank you so much for your share. I got a lot out of it. And it's funny that you were mentioning Fort Lauderdale and purpose.
because it reminded me of when I, before I even came into the rooms, but I was hitting bottom, and I was in Fort Lauderdale, by the way, and I was holed up in a little motel room, and I was coming off of my cocaine and my alcohol, and I was seeking, you know, I was hitting bottom, and I was seeking, and one of the things that happened was I felt this voice inside of me, and the voice spoke to my heart, and it said, you've been using, all these years you've been using your mind, body, and your mind and body for your purposes, drugs, alcohol, sex, whatever, and now you're going to use it for my purposes. And that it didn't happen right away, but the journey continued, you know, and it continues. A lot of the things that you said when you were going over this, I could, at first I was like, you know, just kind of looking at it and just didn't recognize any of it. And then it's like, oh, okay, you know, as you were going up, up and up, and I was like, okay, you know, it just, I can identify. So, and it's funny because part of my morning ritual is I get on Facebook, and a lot of my friends know that. And I get some really, you know, a lot of my friends are in the program, and they post some pretty positive things. And one of the things was about your purpose is not to judge, criticize, and all that. It's to reach out, help, you know, the still suffering, and that is basically to love, you know, and that's basically it, you know, that's all what it's all about. So thank you.
Thanks, Phoebe.
Thank you, Phoebe. Anybody else?
Question
or comment?
That's okay. Hi, my name's Charlie.
Hi, Charlie.
Member of several recovery programs. I too have about 30 years in recovery, and I can relate to what you were talking about with the, you know, you take your recovery person to the meetings, but you leave your spiritual person over there. And in early recovery, I tried out like 17 different religions in a three-year period. And, you know, I consider myself a Jewish, Christian, Buddhist, atheist, and all of the above. But anyway, several years ago, I read a book. I'm not certain the title, but I think it's called Two Tracks, One Goal. And it has a picture of two railroad tracks that merging into the distance. And it's about this very thing. And it's like, you know, how can we be spiritual beings in a physical body in a recovery? It's a recovery-based book. And for myself, it's not even about the name of the religion. Because I don't even, you know, people ask me, you know, what do I practice? I'm like, I don't even want to tell them where I go to church anymore because there's so much dogma about everything. Mm-hmm. You know, you say you're Unitarian, they think this, you say Scientology, they think that, you know, and I've been all of them at some point, and it's like they all have an element of truth, and they all have an element of falsehood, and, you know, it's up to me to take what I need and leave the rest, mm-hmm. including in the rooms. And, with 30 years clean, it wasn't until about 5 years ago that I started to merge my spirituality and my recovery, because I was trying to do A and trying to do B, but never mix the two. And so for me, it was about 5 years ago that I decided that I was going to be a spiritually recovering person in the rooms and not leave that half of me in the parking lot anymore. And it's made all the difference in the world.
Thank you for sharing that. I made the same decision about 3 years ago, and I don't know why it took me so long. Such a relief. And I still abide by all the traditions, you know. It's just that I was holding back too much, and I thought it was humility, but it was something else. So there's one other topic I wanted to just sort of put out here, which is that I'm not sure how many people are in long-term sobriety, but there's this concept that we grow to this point where we say yes to what we're supposed to be doing spiritually, and some people say, well, gosh, I went to my, excuse me, my spiritual center, and I learned that I can't say I am with anything after that that might be damaging. And so I'm just going to drop my program and just say I am. And I understand, I can appreciate that line of thought, but I want you to know I almost did that. I almost did that. I 13 years clean and sober, I moved to some remote area where they had 6 meetings a week, and they were the same 5 people saying the same 4 things, you know. And then I got busy, and pretty soon I wasn't in touch with anybody who could really get my alcoholism and my addiction. And then I had a mad crush on some artist down the road who played great music, and he used certain things to induce greater creativity. And I said, well, count me in. You know what he said? Not on my watch. And he told me to go away, which was such a blessing. I went running back, actually, at that point, to Narcotics Anonymous, because what I wanted him to get for me so that we could be creative together was definitely going to take me back out. And I changed my sobriety date when I first got sober on November 3rd of 1985. I changed it to December 30th because on December 29th at a Christmas party, I used drugs. So I don't celebrate on November 3rd. I do quietly because I haven't had a drink since then. But my date is December 30th. So I got to this point where I was living in Asheville, North Carolina, the new spiritual Mecca, the new Sedona, and I thought I didn't need meetings anymore. And that moment came where I almost used, and I ran back before it happened. And ever since then, I have been really dedicated to finding those people who think, well, now that I've got my spirituality, I don't need my meetings anymore. And saying, well, couldn't you just sort of, you know, upgrade your interpretation a little bit? Couldn't you just sort of, I don't know, just redefine a few things, but stay in the relationship. Those two grumpy people who always made sure that I would call and tell them where I'm at and what I'm doing, they both said, just get your butt back there so that you can be there to show someone else that it works. And I went begrudgingly that time because, once again, I had gotten spirituality and I didn't need that. I'm so glad I have those grumpy people in my life. We love each other now. They used to scare me. The point is that there are so many people also who reach a place in their spiritual evolution and recovery and think, I don't need this anymore. And what if, once again, another bit of purpose is to be sitting next to that person and say, well, gosh, maybe you need to change up your meetings. Maybe you need to just find a way to weave who you've become into your program. It's a holy program, you know. It is spiritually inspired. There's no need to let it go. So once again, I think that's another element of purpose that I have found along the way. Is there anybody else who wants to make a comment or share anything? Yes, Linda.
I have a big mouth. Hi, I'm Linda. Ooh, Linda, I'm an alcoholic and addict. I've had a lot of trouble with the spirituality piece and or meditation. Is there anyone that can give me a hint on like how to center my mind? Because it's always going. The minute my feet hit the floor, I've got 1,000 thoughts. And it's hard to just sit and concentrate on meeting something even for 10 minutes and then meditate.
It just so happens, all you have to do is go into that room in 10 minutes, and you will be immersed in the answer. Yeah, it has taken all of us practice to get there. Any other thoughts? Okay, well, let's make a deal, shall we? Just to take this back to our meetings, take this back to the people in our lives. You know, I used to have what I thought might equate to Catholic guilt, if I knew what it was, for evolving spiritually in recovery. And then, like I said, I realized I was holding back, and we're not supposed to hold back. So take it with you, because there's somebody else who needs to know that it's possible to grow in sobriety, and you'll find, they will find, what we've been looking for all along. Thank you. There is information right over here about getting in touch with me or finding out where I teach and speak in Palm Beach Gardens and Juneau. Would love to have you come. Thanks.